Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for High Velocity Radio.
Welcome to the High Velocity Radio Show, where we celebrate top performers producing better results in less time. Stone Payton, Lee Cantor here with you this afternoon. How you doing, buddy?
I am doing great. I'm excited about this episode.
I am too. I've known about it for quite some time. This is going to be a fantastic segment. A little bit later in the program, we're going to get a chance to visit with a gentleman with United Tax and Business, Mr. Cleveland Stargell. He is doing some really interesting things to serve the small business community, and looking forward to that conversation. But first up on the High Velocity Radio Show this afternoon, it is my distinct pleasure to introduce the chairman, the Grand Poobah, to Big Kahuna, with a little firm some of you may have heard of, Fisher Phillips. Please join me in welcoming to the broadcast Mr. Roger Quillen. How are you, man?
I'm doing great, and thank you so much for having me here today.
Can you share a little bit about the mission purpose of Fisher Phillips?
Yeah, Fisher and Phillips is one of the big national law firms that commits its practice to representing companies in matters that arise from the workplace. We're pretty big. We're in 32 cities, 350 lawyers, and been at it for a long time.
And you're based here in Atlanta?
We are.
And can you share a little bit about how the growth occurred?
Well, we started in Atlanta a long time ago, and as late as 1981, we were still only in Atlanta. We had a couple of early expansion efforts that led eventually to us having five offices nationwide in 1999. But then our growth really took off. And so from 1999, which is also the year I became chairman of the firm.
That's probably a coincidence, right?
Right. Right. We took off on quite a growth mode, and so now we're in 32 cities.
And you recently rebranded from Fisher and Phillips to Fisher Phillips.
That's right. And it's still very difficult for me not to have that extra syllable in there. But yes, we're Fisher Phillips today.
And what was the thinking behind the rebranding?
We are a very different law firm today than we were some years ago, even 10 years ago. And so we wanted a new brand that would reflect the new firm that we are and that we are becoming.
But what was the significance of getting rid of the and or the ampersand?
Well, while we want to honor our past, we do not want to live in the past. And the ampersand to us is a vestige of the past. So it's also true that many people in the country already refer to us as Fisher Phillips. Mm-hmm. And so recognizing that and wanting to get rid of the old school look, we decided to drop it, as by far most of the Am Law 200 firms have done, and so now we are Fisher Phillips.
And then part of your secret sauce, though, is your commitment to your clients and customer service?
That's right. We think one of our brand distinguishing factors is our high-touch, five-star client service. We pride ourselves on being fanatically responsive and taking a real businessman's approach to servicing our clients. So we want to see our clients' problems as first business problems. And we think that by doing that, they will see us as their partners in solving their issues.
And that's an important distinction, to be seen as a partner or to behave as a partner rather than a vendor.
And we think so. We think that if our clients understand that we feel as deeply about their problems as they do, then that will cause a bonding for us that will last a long time.
But how do you behaviorally or as an organization kind of train your people to behave in that manner?
You just send a memo. It's easy. I mean, you got 350 attorneys, you got 300 some odd support staff. You send a memo, you say, look, we're going to do this, right? Is that how you did it?
Well, not quite. I would say it ties into our basic DNA. So while we want to be looking to the future, we do honor our past. And I remember personally being taught by Ike Fisher that being fanatically responsive was an important part of what it meant to be a lawyer at Fisher & Phillips. He told a story way back then. I still remember it. He said, why do you believe a fireman rushes to the scene of the fire so quickly? And the answer he gave was because he knows if he doesn't get there fast, the fire could go out on its own.
And that's a bad thing?
He was just trying to teach us through an anecdote that we need to think about getting there as fast as a fireman. So it's been there all along, but in terms of teaching it, our senior lawyers were all taught that, so it's part of our basic understanding of who we are, and we pass it down. But we also have it as part of our orientation program for everybody, not just lawyers, but for staff. So every single person who comes to Fisher Phillips goes to an orientation program, which includes a video training piece. It happens to involve me speaking to them, and I am telling them how important this is.
And then, but are there, I mean, you're sharing that anecdote about the fire, but do you share other kind of examples of the
corporate legends? They're important, right?
Proactive and being, rather than reactive to a situation.
Yeah. It's just fundamental to who we are to try to be as close to the client as their own people down the hallway. So we don't want them to feel that it's going to take a long time for a Fisher Phillips lawyer to get there on the scene. We want them to feel that we're as close by as their own HR department.
And are you seeing the law profession as a whole? How can you share how you've seen it change over the years?
Oh, the changes have been many and sweeping. The competition for clients these days is something that is so different than it used to be. When I was coming up as a young lawyer, I was taught that if you performed very faithfully good service for a client and charged them a fair price, they would be your client forever. Those days are long gone. For many big clients, if you're a fantastic lawyer for them for 20 years, all it gets you is an opportunity to compete in their next RFP process. So we have to be really on our toes to hold on to our clients and to get new clients. I say that's the biggest change.
And how much of your time is spent educating your client of the variety of services and the depth of work that you can help them in?
Well, in my own job as the chairman of the firm, I try very hard to visit at least 10 clients every year, strictly for the purpose of checking in with them. I identify key clients with the help of some of our leading partners, and I go visit with those clients, and I check in and ask, what are the traits that you most want to see in your outside counsel? How are we doing living up to those traits? What do you see in our competitors that you wish you would see in us? Mm-hmm. Anything we can do better? Is there anything you think we do better than our competitors? I ask them, what do you believe Fisher Phillips does? And I'm always interested to listen very carefully to that. Often, they know very little about what we do other than what we've already done for them.
You find that across the board?
I would say consistently, I find that our clients tend to think of us as doing what they have previously asked mm-hmm. us to do, which means often they don't know 80% of what we do.
And so how do you organizationally kind of open their eyes? I know you're doing these 10 kind of touches a year, but how do you as an organization kind of inherently expand their breadth of knowledge about your firm?
Well, what I learned from those visits, I then report to all of our firm. I strongly encourage people to go out to their clients and make sure they're constantly reminding clients, not just when there's a legal problem to discuss, but just reach out to them and discuss with them, how are things going for you, and tell them how things are going for us and make sure they understand. But of course, our new website has a lot to do with that too. So this brand new website that we rolled out in connection with our branding is a fantastic place for our clients to understand more about what we do.
And what's some of the stuff on the website?
Well, there's a knowledge resource center. There's a upcoming events center. There's a much more robust description of our specific industry and subject matter practice areas. It is a rich resource. But I would say for a client just simply wanting to go browse, it's a fantastic place to go find out what is the latest stuff happening in our field and how is Fisher Phillips responding to it.
I was going to ask just kind of a general question around how the whole sales and marketing thing works for you. And I am interested in that, particularly for brand new clients. But I got to say, if my attorney and or the chairman of my attorney's firm is asking me the questions that you described, that's all the sales and marketing you got to put on me. That builds a level of confidence and trust in your provider that, I mean, that is fantastic. I think you ought to bottle that and sell it.
Well, what I've found in those visits is I always start off by saying, first, please understand this is not a sales call. You are doing me a favor to spend an hour of your time with me to tell me how Fisher Phillips can be a better law firm for you. But invariably, before that visit is over, the client is telling me about needs they have that mm-hmm. we can solve that they hadn't thought of until the conversation.
Because don't you want to have to kind of be ahead of things in a proactive manner so that you prevent kind of legal issues?
That's one of our hallmarks is prevention. We've always believed, again, all the way back to the founding generation, we've always believed that if we can help our clients avoid workplace problems, then they will, they'll appreciate us more and be loyal for the long term. So prevention has always been a big part of it, and it continues to be today.
And that, but it sounds like counterintuitive, because it would seem like your firm would, for your own, if you cared more about your own self-serving issues, you would make more if you were reactive. But in essence, to develop the loyalty over time, I would think being proactive is a longer term.
Well, that's true. Let me give you a great example that it's probably 20 years ago now, but our firm was one of the leading innovative firms when it came to resolving workplace disputes through alternative dispute resolution. So most clients at that time were finding themselves heading to court to resolve those disputes.
Right.
But we were one of the firms that was very strong in favor of putting our clients into arbitration agreements, mediation platforms, et cetera. That certainly in the short term probably cost us a lot of work.
Sure.
Because otherwise we'd have been defending those companies in court. But as it turns out, it made us an industry leader in alternative dispute resolution. Our lawyers have litigated some of the top cases, including in the California Supreme Court, that have validated ADR as an approach to resolving workplace disputes. And so what seemed to cost us some business maybe in the short term made us an industry leader in the long term in an area now that's one of the biggest parts of labor and employment law.
Were you involved in that decision to go that route?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely, because there was a real debate in our firm about whether it was in our interest to push our clients to resolve workplace disputes simply and inexpensively, when that was, to our litigators, that was maybe taking away their bread and butter practice.
Right.
But we stuck to our guns, and wow, it has really paid off, because our litigators now are busier than ever handling those same disputes through alternative dispute resolution procedures.
Now, do you have any advice for other leaders of firms that when they have that type of a, it's almost that decision point of, should we do something that would benefit us, but this is really, if we look at it through the eyes of our clients, maybe they're better served in this different path. Like, how did navigating that and negotiating that, I'm sure there were people just as passionate as you are to go this route. There were probably people on the other side as well.
Well, I would say that I shouldn't have to advise any managing partner of a law firm to do what's in the client's best interest. I think anybody you interviewed would say they do that. So my advice, not that they need it, is always, always set your compass on what is really in your client's best interest. And if you will do that consistently, it will all work out in the long run.
So I have a chairman question, because, you know, I'm the number two man in a great big huge firm of four people. But I can tell you that some of what kind of really gets my juices going, and some of the ways that I'm rewarded now, doesn't have so much to do with the things that I found rewarding earlier in my career when I was doing more of the tactical work. As your career progressed, what is it that kind of turns you on, gets you excited, and that you see with and through other people that just kind of keeps you fired up and so excited about, you know, getting at it again tomorrow?
Well, that is a great question to ask me, because I'm one of those guys who consistently tells people, and I mean it, every single morning when my alarm clock goes off, I cannot wait to get to work. I love my job. Love what I do. I feel like I move the needle in an important way every single day. And with a law firm in 32 cities with 350 lawyers and an equal number of support staff, I mean, when I move the needle, it really is moving a lot of people. So I feel like I'm the luckiest guy in the world that in 1999, I was asked to lead Fisher & Phillips. And, you know, praise be, our partners have continued to ask me to do that now consistently for 17 years. And I just love coming up with a vision for the business, getting people to jump on board to share that vision and to go execute. Probably the greatest day in my history at Fisher & Phillips was just a few weeks ago when we were in Los Angeles, Hollywood together, brought all of our lawyers there and our senior support staff. And in one day, we rolled out that new brand that you were talking about earlier. Oh, my golly. I mean, it was the greatest day ever. People were just energized as they saw that new brand come up. And when those doors opened from that conference center and they walked out into the hallway, and the hallway was all set up with our new convention booths, all with the new colors, all the new designs, taglines, new briefcases, business cards, letterhead, stationery, you name it. I mean, that place was on fire. So that's what floats my boat.
Can we talk a little bit about just in general labor and employment law? How has that changed over the years? And with an upcoming election, what do you see kind of coming up?
Well, the changes since I started so long ago have been, wow, unbelievably broad. And it's because every issue that arises in American society, every single one you can think of, manifests early in the workforce. So you think of any social issue, I don't care what it is, if it's race relations, gender equity, LGBTQ issues, I mean, anything you can think of, it's going to hit the workplace. So during my 36 years practicing with Fisher Phillips, the field has changed dramatically with statute after statute and rule after rule that's come in to deal with these new social issues. And it's not slowing down. President Obama has been very, very good to the field of labor relations lawyers and other professionals. So today, the U.S. Department of Labor, the National Labor Relations Board, the EEOC, the Wage and Hour Division, the Occupational Safety and Health Administration, all of those agencies up there are very, very activist in regulating the workplace. And of course, that's our bread and butter. So it's making us extremely busy. And I think as long as there's a continuation of those policies in the White House, particularly through the next election, if that were to happen, I think we would expect that it would continue to make us very busy.
Now, are you seeing anything with the advent of all this technology and all this automation where it seems to be less people involved, like employed in the organizations, and more people kind of being freelance and on their own and creating their own path?
Yeah, you know, that's a new practice. The newest practice area that we have embraced at Fisher Phillips is called the gig economy. We think one of the most profound changes that we're going to see over the next decade is going to be the movement of people from traditional employment roles into what is now being referred to as independent worker roles. You got to be careful not to say independent contractor, because the rules limiting that status of independent contractor are pretty strenuous. But you think about an Uber driver.
Right.
By the way, Kevin and I came out here for our interview today with an Uber driver.
Cool.
So you think about an Uber driver. Person who owns, in her case, Eleanor, she owned her own car, came and picked us up, brought us out here, and she'll go off and do whatever she wants to do for the rest of her day. So is she an employee? Well, Uber would say absolutely not. Is she an independent contractor? Uber would say yes. But the government is not really liking to see that, because the government wants to put working people into the boxes that the government has understood to apply for the last 80 years.
Sure.
So the government's really struggling with what to do about that. And we are going to be a law firm that is on the cutting edge of this Uberization of America.
And are you seeing more of that or less of that?
Oh, definitely more. I think we're going to see in the area of temporary employment, an interesting new development. It's happening in Europe. It hasn't quite happened in the U.S. yet. Where an employee may walk up to, let's just say a restaurant, to use an example, a potential worker, I shouldn't have said employee, because a potential worker walks up looking for a gig serving at a restaurant. They've never worked there before. In Europe, it is now possible, it's a cutting edge thing, but it's now possible for the employee to walk up, show the restaurant an iPhone app, and say, just click here and you will have a contract with an agency that I'm affiliated with, and all the terms of using me in your restaurant are all taken care of right here. Just read, click accept, and I'll be working for you this shift today. That stuff's going to happen more and more. And again, our firm wants to be on the leading edge of that.
So now when it changes, when industry changes that rapidly, because I mean, like you said, this is an app now. It's an app world. It's a gig economy world. And the government is still playing by older rules or different rules. How they're colliding, right? Yep.
It is a real problem, because companies don't know what set of rules they'll be governed by. Will their relationship with these workers be governed by traditional rules of employer-employee? Will they be governed by the rules of independent contractor, you know, general contractor, independent contractor? And today, more and more people are falling into the crack between those two.
Mm-hmm.
The government really doesn't like it's obvious that the agencies don't like people to be categorized as independent contractors. And therefore, they're coming after employers to try to sweep those people into the employment relationship. And yet the employer is rightfully saying, but we don't control whether this person even chooses to come to work today.
Right.
So how can we be deemed an employer of this person? And by the way, I'm sorry to shift gears on you, but there's another a related thing going on, and that is the government's hostility to the idea of franchise or franchisee.
Right. I was going to bring that up. That seems to have shifted just recently as well, where, you know, the franchisor thought one thing, and then now they're being responsible for a franchisee.
That's right. I mean, the entire concept of franchisor-franchisee relationships is to remove from the franchisor the responsibility of running local operations.
Right.
They essentially sell their brand and they sell their methodology, and then they turn it over in a turnkey operation to somebody who has purchased the right to run that business under that banner. And that has worked very, very well for American business for a long time. But the regulatory agencies are very unhappy that the only recourse an employee has in some situations is against a perhaps small franchisee. And so in a desire to get into the deep pockets of the franchisor, the government is now getting pretty aggressive and hostile against those relationships and trying to make responsibility and liability flow uphill to the big company. Now, our law firm, I'm not going to talk about what we're doing in those cases because we never talk about matters we're handling for clients.
You're winning. That's what you're doing. That's
well, thank you. We count on that. But we are deeply involved in some of the biggest cases in the country that are dealing with those issues.
And then can you share a little bit? I know I don't want to talk about a specific case, but just the ramifications, if that was so, that if the government was able to be, you know, kind of go uphill and get to the franchisor in these cases, the ramifications could really destroy some of the largest companies in the country, right?
Well, what it would destroy would be the interest that the franchisor, the big company, has in these franchise models. So if your whole business model is based on the idea that you can sell the use of your brand and your methodology and then be hands off.
Right.
So you know exactly what your risk is, you know exactly what your revenue model is, only to find out that you're somehow now responsible for workplace liability for people that you have never even touched, it might cause a company, a franchisor, might cause them to decide that that model is no longer worth pursuing. And the downside of that for the franchisees could be huge. Instead of there being a way for a small business person to make a reasonable investment, let's say $100,000 investment to become a franchisee of some restaurant chain, instead of that being an opportunity, that opportunity may simply go out the window. And the big company will have to decide, do we really want to have a store in Hayhira, Georgia or not? And the big company would probably decide, no, we don't want to take that on. So the ramifications aren't just now for the franchisee who doesn't have the business opportunity. It might mean that there is not I don't want to use any brand names, but there might not be that particular restaurant in that small town because the big company doesn't consider that to be an attractive market.
And that could destroy the business, the employees that work there on behalf of the franchisee.
That's right.
There won't be that job anymore for
that
person.
Right. Those new jobs would not arise in the future, and they might even go away if the big company decides it does not want to shoulder that liability anymore.
And when you work with a firm, you're working typically with the franchisor.
No.
Or you work with franchisees as well?
Either one. So sometimes we are retained by the big company to help them maintain that boundary that they so badly want to maintain. But many times we're also representing the local business person who is the franchisee.
Are there any other services that maybe aren't as obvious that you do?
In our firm?
Yeah.
Yeah, I would say there are several. One of them is that we are very big in the area of business immigration law. So when employers are moving employees from country to country, we're involved in that no matter where they're going or where they're coming from. So we have the ability to help people, help employers move workers all over the world. We're very big in the area of non-compete litigation. So we draft non-compete agreements, we enforce them, but then if a company wants to take an employee from a company where there is an agreement that might prevent that, we also represent the rating employer. Mm. Never on the same matter, of course.
Sure.
non-compete, Sometimes it's called unfair trade practices. So depending on where you are in the country, it has one title or the other. We call that practice area employee defection and trade secrets.
Mm-hmm.
We're very big in workplace safety, very big in employee benefits law, wage and hour, of course. The things that people would normally expect of a firm like us, of course we do. We're very big in helping employers remain union free if that's what they choose to do. We help them deal with unions if they have a union and are bargaining with them. We do contract, grievance, and arbitration work in a unionized setting. We're very, very big in all areas of law that deal with discrimination in the workplace. And as I mentioned, wage and hour and workplace safety. So we've pretty much have it covered.
And when you work in all the different places you work in, you become experts in the laws of that particular state? Because I would imagine like California probably has a whole bunch of different laws than they would maybe in Georgia.
That's right. So lawyers are licensed to practice state by state. There is no such thing as a federal bar admission. So in order to practice in states, we have to have experts that are local.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one of the reasons we have offices in 32 cities and I think, I don't know, 24 or 5 states. We're very big in California. Just a few months ago, we opened our 5th office in the state of California, which is it's an absolute bonfire of labor and employment issues out there. And so we now have, I'd say the firm's center of gravity has moved westward repeatedly because of the weightedness of work in California.
Sounds to me like a really exciting time to be in labor and employment law for the person earlier in their career or maybe looking to make a transition. What counsel, if any, would you offer them as they're speaking with the firm, if they are in search of a culture, a mindset like you're describing at Fisher Phillips? What should they be looking for? What are the questions they should be asking? What are the things they should be avoiding? Any advice on that front?
Sure. In fact, one of my joys at this stage of my career is to be open to young people who will call me up or be introduced in some manner, and I just give them career advice. So I love to do that. It's just one of those things you get to do to pay back at a later stage in your career. So I would say that if you have an interest in our area of the law, labor and employment representing the management side, then I would strongly encourage a person to seek a firm like mine. We are certainly not the only big, national, powerful labor employment firm in America. There are others, and we respect our competitors very, very much. There are many other firms who are you might describe as general practice corporate firms, and they tend to have somewhat limited labor and employment opportunities. And so I would say if you know you want to do what we do, then I would focus on a firm like ours, a national firm that does only this thing. Because it is an awesome thing to come to work every day with a large community of people who know exactly what you do, who like what you do, respect it. Hallway conversations, water cooler conversations are about your practice area. And for a young person who's getting a start, there's nothing like continuing your education in a place that's dedicated to your practice area.
And you guys are being recognized for what you do. You recently have won some awards, right?
Yes, we do get our share of awards, we're happy to say. So we have now 2 years in a row been recognized by U.S. News World Report Best Lawyers as a firm of the year. In one case, employment litigation firm of the year. Another case, labor law firm of the year. So yeah, we do love to get our share of awards. We also have many of our individual lawyers who are recognized by the great rating agencies every year. They're all competitors with each other, so I won't run through that list of names. But as long as they're rating lawyers and giving out awards for top-rated lawyers, we want our people on the list, and many, many of our lawyers are.
Before we wrap, can you share a little bit? I think this is important for companies to know about the Family and Medical Leave Act. You guys created some sort of an app or a calculator around that?
Yeah, one of the things that turned up under the Family Medical Leave Act early on was employers calling very often just simply to ask a lawyer, and unfortunately for them, to have a lawyer go on the clock to work them through the timetable of the leave that was required. You know, how do you calculate the permissible leave time under the Family Medical Leave Act? We decided that instead of doing that repetitive work and sending clients bills for a tenth of an hour here or a half hour there, we simply created an app that our clients can have on their iPhone or their Samsung Galaxy if they want to. And they just pull up that app. They type in just a little bit of information, and it pops out the information that the client needs, and it avoids a phone call to their lawyer.
And again, that speaks to the culture of the firm, where you're looking out for the client and being proactive and giving them a solution that they probably didn't even know could occur.
Well, that's right. I mentioned earlier how hard it is even to hold on to your clients these days, because our competitors are knocking on our clients' doors every day, and we're doing it to theirs, believe me. And so it's a very, very competitive marketplace, and everything you can do to cause a stickiness to the relationship, to cause the client to attach and believe you're invested in them, mm-hmm. makes it more likely they'll stay with us.
I don't think we've captured that much information on any substantive topic in the space of 33 minutes in our entire career. I can't decide whether I'm hoping that my number one fan mom is listening to this episode or not, because she wanted me to be a lawyer. I probably didn't have the IQ points, but she would probably, if she had this interview at her disposal, she would like play it for me and say, see the kind of culture you could join, see the kind of career you could have. What a fantastic organization this must be to work with and for. Congratulations for what you've built, man.
Well, thank you so much, Bea. As I said, it is a pleasure for me every day.
And the new rebranding obviously is well received with your people. How about your clients? They're all as excited as you guys?
Well, the ones we've heard from, I suppose if there's a client out there who's disappointed, maybe we haven't heard from them. But all the feedback we've gotten is just two thumbs up.
Great.
All right. So what's the best way for our listeners to reach out and learn more, have a substantive conversation with the appropriate professional in your firm, or learn more, maybe the website, email, phone address?
Yeah.
Whatever's appropriate.
I'd say in today's world, the best way is to go to www.fisherphillips.com. You go there, you will find a robust website with all sorts of easy functionality, and it will lead you through subject areas. It will introduce you to the freshest papers in our field. It will invite you to events, but it also has the bios of all of our lawyers. You can do easy searching on there. If you're looking for expertise in any particular area, just go to the search function on the front page, and it will take you right to where you want to go.
All right. Well, Roger Quillen, Chairman Fisher Phillips, it has been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for joining us this afternoon.
Thank you so much for having me. I have really enjoyed it.
Hey, can you hang out with us while we visit with our other guests?
I would love to.
Fantastic. All right. Next up on the High Velocity Radio Show this afternoon, we have with us, with United Tax and Business, Cleveland, how do you pronounce your last name?
It's pronounced Stargell.
Stargell, which I got it right. I had a 50% shot at it when I intro'd the show. Cool. So we'll keep pronouncing it that way throughout the balance of the show if that works for you.
Yes, that's perfect.
So did you learn anything in that last segment?
Oh, it was very interesting. I like the amount of information that I received from that individual.
So United Tax and Business, yes. What are you out there doing for folks?
Well, what we are doing is we are helping people either grow their present tax business or showing them how to open their own tax business through our seminar that we're offering August the 25th. It's going to be a very informative seminar. We've tried to structure the seminar in a time frame so that if individuals are running present businesses or if they're working, they can attend the seminar from 6 p.m. until 9 p.m. It's a 12-week seminar. But it just doesn't stop at the seminar. Our goal with our company is to make sure that individuals actually grow and they have a solid business model. So even through the tax season, carrying on through 2017, we will be there as your back office. We also have the software available so that we will train you on the software. And we also will show you how to become registered with the IRS so that you become a professional in your field. So that's what we're offering, along with strong marketing. And we have several partnerships.
Because they really don't have a business until they have a customer, right?
That's correct. That's correct. You do not have a business until you have a customer. And speaking about that, we also teach our partners client service, how to service our clients, give our clients good information, give our clients accurate information, because in this business of tax preparation, you have a lot of individuals. They want to just establish shop for 3 to 4 months and then it's hard to contact your tax professional afterwards. But our goal is to push to make sure you have 24/7 access throughout the year, because you'll also receive letters from the IRS. Unfortunately, some of us receive those, and you'll receive any questions that you may have, just simple questions. We have access to individuals that are very versed in the field. If you cannot get into contact with me, we also have strong partners that we work with that can guide you through the maze of tax preparation. So that's from a client standpoint. And we show our partners, our potential business owners, how to do the same. And we have found that the purpose of, or a benefit of, just having a strong unit, you're not just dependent on yourself, but you also have a team that you can depend on and work with.
So now you're working with CPAs? Is that who take this class?
Yes, we work with CPAs, and we also work with enrolled agents. If people are not familiar with what an enrolled agent is that is an individual that has taken a series of 3 tests administered through a testing center, ProMetric, and after they become certified, they can represent individuals in front of the IRS. And the benefit of that is you're just having a professional to work with you, and you also have someone there that you can, that there to answer any questions that you may have.
So how did you get into this business, and how do you have access to so much information? You're partnering up with other folks with specific expertise and in various disciplines, or are you just really a smart guy, or what?
Well, actually, the way that I got into the business, I have always had a business background. I have invested in multiple businesses, and I was looking at investing in several other businesses of our competitors. And I started to look at the price point and or the cost of opening these businesses. And I started to think, well, maybe we could take this same idea, make it more affordable, provide this information to the masses. Some people, they have the ambition, but they do not have the finances, such as $20,000-$30,000, to open their own tax business. So we have structured this program so that we can make it as affordable as possible, but also providing quality service as well.
So you've sized us up pretty quick. You probably just come in here and you say, now I know how I could run Business Talk Radio. Is that why you're here?
I wish that I was that good, but
no, it's a fun business, because as you can see, you get a chance to visit with a lot of different folks from a variety of fields. What's your favorite part, man? What do you like the best?
The best about the tax business is being able to let an individual know that they're getting a refund. That's
fun, huh?
Yes, I like, because to break the news to someone that they owe X amount of dollars, or even in some aspects, you know, it's just high numbers. Regardless of the person's income, nobody would like to pay the IRS $20,000, $30,000, $40,000.
And it's one thing if you know it's coming, right? But do you find, particularly some of these folks, this may be their first shot at trying to do something entrepreneurial. They don't see it coming, and it's because they didn't learn some of these other things you were describing. They were not prepared for what their tax burden is. They didn't properly plan for it. Is that one set of mistakes that you come across?
Yes. That happens often. Individuals that just from the aspect of owing the IRS, they have not prepared. And that's something else that we do. We structure it. Just say if you do owe the IRS, we will look at your finances. We will structure a plan for you throughout the year to hopefully reduce that tax burden. We cannot say that it will be eliminated. We cannot say what the outcome will be, but we are trying to reduce that tax burden. And if we can reduce that, we will. But if not, we'll show you ways that you may be able to offset that to cover that tax burden throughout the year versus trying to generate X amount of dollars in a few months. So there are ways to do that.
Now, are the classes in person at a location, or are they online?
Yes, the classes are in person. And the reason that we wanted to do in-person classes is that gives you a personal feel. That gives you the opportunity to meet myself. I will be also instructing part of the class, and that will give you the opportunity to meet one of our enrolled agents, and he will be instructing the bulk of the class as well. And what we will teach you is the software portion, as well as how to become registered for the IRS. If you visit our website, www.unitedtaxandbusiness.com, you will notice the location is at the Mansour Center in Cobb County. And we'll be more than happy to have you. And we are, even if you're just wanting to learn just the tax business as far as just for yourself and just gaining more knowledge, we'll show you how to do that as well.
Fantastic. And the times and dates again on the next round for this thing.
For the first date, it will start August the 25th. And the time is from 6 p.m. until 9 p.m. And we will have that each Thursday for 12 weeks. And then afterwards, we will go into the marketing, and that will last through through around March of 2017. So you have about 8 months to hang out with us.
That sounds like a lot of fun. All yeah. right. Cleveland Stargell, United Tax and Business, and can be found UnitedTaxAndBusiness.com. Thanks so much for coming to visit with us, man.
All right. Thanks. It's been great.
All right. Until next time, this is Stone Payton for Lee Cantor and our guests this afternoon and everyone here at the Business Radio X family saying we'll see you in the fast lane.